office, I would like to come in and read the Word of God. Now look, if you are on your way to heaven, and I am on the way to hell, what do you think to do?
Can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
10 WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schmid is brilliant and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. A tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
History. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. What do we have for you this morning? Well, in our second hour, of course, a lost episode of Gene Shepherd. I have five to choose from. Haven't picked one yet. You want to hear one about Army radar? You want to hear how Gene feels about working in radio? Several to choose from. All right, and we have selected the shortest Gene Shepherd of the five that I had selected. I know I didn't hear it. I don't know what it is. From 1962, August 22nd, 1962, Terminal Man. And hopefully it will be over before our time runs out. If it isn't, the next show can eat it. This is WBAI New York.
Oh, boy, it was nip and tuck all the way down the line. Nip and tuck. And it's really going to be much better, I think, when Amy Vanderbilt gets out that little folder about how I should behave on the bus. And now I would like to suggest, if this is the way it's going to be, because we need a little guidance. I feel that more than anything else, we, the great common herd, the great salt of the earth. Is there anyone out there who's the salt of the earth tonight? Who really understands how it feels to be part of humanity and the basic stuff of which mankind is made? The sea, the soil, the wind, the rocks, the sky. and the TV shows, and all the things that make up the real life that we live. You know, speaking of the real life, this friend of mine, whom I shall not mention because it's a very touchy situation, is a PR man. Now, I don't know whether or not the person who is just living in the world out there, it's hard for us who are in the communicative arts, arts, communication. There's two bops for you right there. It's difficult for people who are involved in the communicative arts to really know what the great mass, or if there is a great mass, those people out there, whether they're alive or whether they're thinking or whether they're feeling or understanding or whether they're doing anything for that matter. Until finally the situation has come full round now to where the public relations industry now faces the world as though it's a great big glob of silly putty. Oh yes, it's a, now do you know how silly putty acts? First of all, it's silly. There's no question about that. There's a lot of things that are silly in this world, but very, very few things are sillier than silly putty, and very few things are sillier than that great mass of humanity. Silly putty. Now, the PR people take a hold of the silly putty, you see, and they mold it to any shape they want it to mold it to. Silly putty does that. Now, the thing that silly putty does, though, is that after it is molded to that shape, it gradually reassumes its original shape almost but not quite. After a long period of time, you wait. Now, if you have a glob of silly putty, let us say that is roughly shaped like a bowling ball, which I should say before we go any further, there is a bowling ball theory of the mass concept of man's general, how do you picture mankind? If I said to you, mankind, how do you see it? A big bowling ball, a big glob. It's an old bowling ball. It's all rubber. But nevertheless, it's a bowling ball. Yeah, how do you see it? How do you see mankind? Do you see it as a great big parade? You know, speaking of parades, I got this bit here. I just got to read this to you. It's a wild. I'm a great collector of headlines. Don't worry, I'll get to the PR thing because that's all part of what we're doing here tonight. I have to explain it to you that public relations, you understand, is roughly the art of taking all the rotten stuff that happens, all the kicks in the you-know-where that happen to people, and making them seem like they're good. And if possible, making them seem like they didn't happen at all. And if it is quite obvious that it did happen, it's for the betterment of everyone involved. Now, probably one of the best PR men of history was Hitler. Oh, yes. Oh, Hitler was very good. He convinced a lot of people that those gas ovens were good for him. He did, actually. It's a sad fact, but true. If you followed any of the history of that particular era. But the whole business of PR has become, today, much more important in almost every area of existence than the activity that public relations purports to discuss or to explain. Now, there are many companies here in our country alone, for example, who have long ago given up making a product as we know it. What they do is make an image of a product, which is a very different thing. Now, it is, have you noticed as you drive along, you go out, say you take a drive to Jones Beach on the weekend, and you will see, as you drive along Jones Beach, you will see about every 400 or 500 yards a 1962 car sitting there with its hood up, and a guy walking around looking teed off. Well, now this is a guy who has somehow run afoul of the dream. It didn't work out. Whatever it is, it didn't work out. But he never seems to relate it to the public relations image of the car that he bought. You notice that, Ed? He never seems to realize he's been had. He never seems to say, well, what is this commercial? Oh, trouble free forever, ever, no terrible fee. Trouble with a super roomy eight. A boomer roopy hot soccer roomy dowie. Wow, dynamo eight, pow. And he goes down and he says, geez, trouble free forever. And he goes down and buys it. And 2 weeks later, he's standing out there on Queens Boulevard and the sun is beating down on his bald head. His collar is popping in the back there and sweat is rolling down his anklets. and you can hear his tennis shoes are squishing, and he's walking around the back, and he keeps kicking the son of a gun. And already the hubcaps are rusty around the edge, you see. And all the while, as he's walking around, his wife's got the radio on the dashboard there. It's the only thing that works, finally. Everything is reduced now. And the radio is going, a-roop-a-toop-a-po-ee, a-roop-a-poop-a-po-ee, a-roomba-doo-a-zoom-a-boom-a-eight, a-dynamo-a-socko, a-forever-ever-good, and never-never-any problems ever again. Trade it in. Now. Trade. Make a big deal. And it comes out of there, and they're talking about the clinker that he's driving. Now, what is the actual problem? Well, the actual problem is that the automobile manufacturers say, like about, oh, I'd say 10 years ago, stopped making cars and started to make costume jewelry. Now, that's a very different thing. Now, costume jewelry doesn't behave very good on the turnpike. It looks very great on ads, and it looks wonderful with a chick standing there in the picture with her, you know, kind of draped over the hood there with the wolfhounds. Looking out of the back end there in the convertible, and you know, it looks great. I mean, that's what they're selling. Now, the relationship between that thing and the reality is never somehow ever brought into play between the people. Now, here's an example. Now, I had a fantastic thing happen to me the other day. Now, I'm sure that all of you hear all day long about how wonderful it is to fly. I mean, there's nothing like flying. I mean, it's soft, smooth, the sound of jets. They have these great commercials that come on. Yes, jet away to Los Angeles. In just a few hours, you'll be landing in the City of the Angels. Yes, our wonderful King Dynamic Empress ride, which provides you meals fit for a king and an emperor. Yes, the red carpet treatment on our new red carpet AA first class flight. Only $49.50 to the West Coast. Well, you know that commercial. Well, I'll tell you, old Shepard was euchred here a couple of days ago. I mean, I bit for it. You know, I'm listening to these commercials all day long about how wonderful it is to fly. Well, as you're probably aware, we have just spent, I don't know how many, $87 billion trillion to build these fantastically ugly buildings out at International Airport. You know those big buildings? Well, I don't know whether you've been out there recently, but here's exactly what happened to old Shep the other day. Innocently, you see, I'm part of the 20th century parade, all marching along there with the streetlights out, but with my banjo going full blast. So I arrive out there, you see, and I'm wondering, see, I'm told now that everything is we have a belief, and this is, I guess, where the crux of it all is, that as we move along, we are slowly beginning to beat everything down, that we are curing all the problems, that the progress consists of defeating all those little nagging, niggling things that have been bugging people ever since the beginnings of time. Like, you know, your ankle hurts. All right, there's a big new machine that does away with ankle hurting. Like, you got to do the dishes. A big new machine is developed to do the dishes. So your nose gets out of joint once in a while. You got to blow it. There's a machine that comes out and produces this new kind of Kleenex that blows your nose automatically. And, you know, I mean, this is what progress consists of, yeah. And there'll be an automatic strike-hitting machine eventually. I'm sure, for guys who are getting bugged by bowling. There will be automatic golf clubs that will fire 400-yard drives for guys who can't get off the tee. It's just that way. You see, for years, people have been getting bugged by baseball. They didn't have enough home runs. So now they have the automatic machine-driven balls. I don't know whether you are familiar with what's happened to baseball, but even the banjo hitters are hitting 40 home runs a year now. There's no problem. That everybody waits for 9 home runs in every ball game. So, in short, all of our problems are being solved all the way down the line. Now, you know as well as I do that it's easier to get around now today, isn't it? Than it used to be, right? Right? Well, I don't know whether you've stood there with your radiator percolating on the George Washington Bridge for 9 hours straight on a Sunday afternoon trying to get to the Pompanos or some little piddling place down the street you're trying to get to. Forget it. If you think you can own a car in New York City, forget it, Dad. If cars are totally obsolete, well, of course, what that really means is that people are obsolete, too. Somehow, if we could do away with them. By the way, that's the first thing that Barnes has done that I didn't like. It suddenly occurred to me, they're taking down those great stoplights on Fifth Avenue, you know, with mercury on the top. Oh, Barnes, what's the matter with you? For crying out loud. I mean, everybody's getting the super efficiency. Well, here's what happens with the super efficiency. I arrive out there at the at this new Idlewild terminal. You see the new terminal out there. Hello, I says, I arrived at the new terminal. Okay, so I get at the new terminal. I'm dangling the bait down there. Nobody's biting. Now, I arrive at the new terminal, and I get out there, and they have a building. Now, I'll tell you, first of all, here's what made it so funny. The building must have been 9 blocks long. It had a window that was 10 blocks long. That window, I'd say that window was 4 stories high. Well, all you actually looked onto was the back end of a hangar with about 6 guys out there scratching, wearing dirty old coveralls. But that's all right. It had a fantastic window. And so that's just part of it, see. So I arrived there, and I've got my little bag, you know, that says Whoopi Airlines on the side of it. I'm taking the new Dyna Empress jet flight that's going to go all the way out there, and I'm going to have the carpets rolled out and everything. So I arrive, and here's this gigantic, wild building. And they must have spent $8 billion for it. Again, I say that we're so hung on technology that the final product we don't care about, as long as the machine looks great. Have you noticed the new IBM machines? You ride up and down at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm looking out on 2nd Avenue from a bus the other day, and there's an IBM machine, some IBM place over there, and it says on the window, it says, stuff we're doing. It says, missile detonating characteristics are being calculated in here at 2 o'clock in the morning. And they were all little blue and yellow and pink and sort of shocking green little machines that are going, and little blue and green and yellow lights just lighting. And there's 2 guys sitting in there, all dressed in their blue bond suit clothes, and they're walking around looking very... And there's a big sign that says, think, over them, which I thought was such a wild thing to put in the middle of that. It's going. Not one of those guys had a thought, for crying out loud, since he left 3rd grade. Oh, speaking of deep thinking, this is WOR AM with FM New York. Well, nevertheless, I arrive out at this terminal, you see, and I'm coming to a conclusion about our existence at just about this moment. I get out of the cab, and I go in through the doorway, and the door opens automatically, see? Sucks me right in. And it sort of excludes, extrudes me right into this great big cavern. Boy, the air conditioning is going, and it's 30 degrees colder than Purdue University in January, and that's cold. And I get in there, and it's really bitter cold, and I can hear from somewhere, it's like it's seeping through the air, the eternal music, which I'm sure that all of us will be accompanied to our graves with. And so, by the way, I suspect that all of that is by... It's interesting. One of the most popular guys today producing that kind of music is named Nero. Ha ha! Put that in your thing and smoke it. Just thought you ought to know. The signs are here. Oh, did you know that? It's a guy named Nero. Seriously. Yeah. He's producing that kind of music. It's nothing but fiddles. Fiddles and a honky-tonk piano that's playing away there, and they're playing things like the Vienna Waltz there, and on the Blue Danube, and all that wonderful stuff that we can quietly go downhill and down the drain with, and why. Well, anyway, I arrive in this place. Now, remember, I am arriving. It's very nervous music. That's true, Ed, very nervous. And I'll tell you, everything is nervous. There's nervous radio listening. There's nervous stuff. Have you noticed that whenever one of these big critics, what really bothers me about that whole business of the nervous music, you take the big critics, take a big critic like Gould. Whenever Jack Gould writes a big column about a great new radio concept, it consists mostly of recorded music. I think there's a big new serious radio station coming on, and they're going to play music all day long, and they're not going to allow anybody to talk. Anybody. And, of course, then this is a big write-up. Once more, radio moves forward as a communicative art. Indeedimo. Well, anyway, I arrived out here at the American Airlines or whatever, International Airlines or Eastern Airlines. I don't know, it did make a difference. It's a great big building. You know, there's a big building out there. And I get into this building, and here is the scene that confronted me. It was about $8 million worth of house, and the air conditioning is going, the music is playing, and there is a counter. Well, we're here roughly at Times Square. This counter, I would say, extends deep into the village from here. I'd say it ends somewhere around 8th Street. And yes, it was a wild counter, you know, and it was as far as I could see all the way down. I would hate to do some broken field running in there. I used to play football, and that was about 9 football fields long, and I got tired looking at it, you know. And it went way down there, and all the way up along the side of it, there were these sort of screen-like affairs. They looked like big television screen things. This is where the automatic tape stuff comes in. The numbers would be flashing on there, and you know, this was all, of course, this is all window dressing. And here is the scene then that confronted me. There were about 4 clerks, and attached to each clerk was a line of, like, say, over 75 feet long. And people, the same old ordinary rotten people that I saw standing in bus stations in West Virginia, the same rotten people that I saw standing in bus stations in Hessville, Indiana, the same crowd that I saw standing in bus stations in Chillicothe, Ohio, with the same kid going, wah, 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 and the same little angry man looking for that room, you know. He said, where is it? And nobody can tell him where it is. And sort of fat lady said, the same crowd, and they're all doing the same thing, waiting. They got about 4 clerks. All that empty counter. Well, I get into the line, you see, and all the while, you see, I'm still believing it's going to happen any minute now, that new jet flight that's going to suck me right in and just shoot me out on the West Coast or wherever it is I'm going to go. And I'm a 20th century man. I'm like the guy you see in the pictures, you know, with the thin attaché case and the snap brim $20 hat and the thin coat and the thin life and the thin mind and the thin eyes. And I'm getting off, you know, this is a hard-hitting young man on the go. And I'm waiting there, and my knees are itching. And the music is playing, and this kid is standing in front of me, and he's, oh, you know, the, oh, I don't know, get personal about what the kid is doing. It's very embarrassing and all. And there's a guy standing behind me, and he's got goldfish and a jug, and there are a whole bunch of ladies yelling, and people come, and the line is getting longer, and the same 4 clerks are chewing the fat. Well, I said to Charlie, I'll tell you, Charlie, and then once in a while, one picks up, he talks on the phone, he hangs up, and another chick sort of walks around back there, and you could hear her garter belt snapping, and she's walking around, she's just fooling around, and this is in the middle of that $8 billion building. Nothing is happening. So I finally work my way up to the front of the line, and the guy's chewing a gum, and I says, "I'm on flight 6SJ7 here." And I take him. He's been canceled. I said, "What?" He's been canceled. I said, "What do you mean canceled? For crying out loud, why didn't you announce it on this thing here that's playing? Yes, sir, that's my baby. It's been canceled. I could have gone to the bar or something. It's been canceled, buddy. I'm sorry." I said, what do you mean? The first class passenger been canceled. And what if I've got a big thing going on out there? It's canceled. So, well, when does the next flight leave? By now, I can see that I'm arguing with the machine. He says, let's see. I can get you on USA Airlines. There's a flight. Of course, you'll have to be on standby. That flight is in 45 minutes. What do you mean standby? I've got a reservation. He says, wait a minute. Let me take a look at that reservation. Just a minute. Just a minute. And he takes my little IBM punch card now that they give you for a ticket. Have you seen that thing? And he looks at it. Yeah, it's very interesting. He looks at it, and he looks at it. He pushes a button. It's going. Something that's going like that. And suddenly he turns to me. He says, you don't have a reservation. I said, what do you mean I don't have a reservation? I went down to the office. I said, what do you mean I don't have a reservation? For crying out loud, I got a ticket. He said, I'm sorry, you're not listed on flight 6SJ7, a reservation. I said, I've got the ticket there. There it is, says reservation, flight 6SJ7. And by now, steam is coming out of my ears, you know, and I'm looking at that 18 million miles of window and that 400 feet of ceiling above me. The music is playing, and I'm hearing the commercial. Yes, sir. First class Empress flight all the way to Eden and back. Take that new flight to Shangri-La. 4950. Well, I'm standing there, and you know, and here's this pimply-faced guy in front of me. He's looking like it. And then he turns to me and says, well, now look, it's not my fault, Mac. Do not get teed off with me, because we have a system here now. We've got a system. It's all done on tapes. And if the machine did not register your reservation, you're out of luck. What? The machine did not register your reservation. You're out of luck. It's on a tape. I'm telling you the truth. I said, on a tape. Who can I see? He said, there's nobody out here. We're not in charge of this machine. This thing comes in from the main office. It's sent all over the country. It's on a tape. It's on an IBM tape there. And all the while, I see this little machine next to him. and names are coming up and things are flashing. And he's standing around there, you know, it's like he's playing a game of pool. And he's walking around, he's totally uninvolved, he has no worries, you see. Because what has happened is that his responsibility has been removed by this device next to him. He doesn't care what happens now. I says, well, no, wait. So I says, who can I see about? He says, it's not going to do you any good to see anything. This is just the terminal out here, Mac. We don't have anything to do with this. Now, you want to go on the next flight or not? So what can I say? I says, okay. When is the next flight? Oh, let's see. Just a minute. I'll check. I'll see whether or not there's any seats there. He dials the thing. Flight Success J7GT XL. Are you sure? Now I'm getting panicky. I can see myself on a wind-driven Greyhound bus all the way out to the West Coast, you see. I'm getting panicky. As a matter of fact, if I had taken that wind-driven bus 4.5 hours earlier, I'd have been halfway through Ohio already, you see. As it is, I'm still standing out there cooling my heels with the Muzak playing. And so he says, put aside a tentative. I'm a tentative. So put aside a tentative. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's here. Yeah, right now. Yeah, Shepard. Yeah. Tentative, yes. Okay. Well, what's that, Fred? Yeah. Oh, no kidding. That old son of a gun. Yeah? Really? Again? Okay. He hangs up. He says, well, you're tentative for 8:15. Ron, and then you go down to that coffee shop and you sit on those little seats, you see, and you sit there and you say, I'll have coffee, please. And all the while,
Johnson, flight 17, please report to the information office, please.
Yes, sir, that's my baby now.
Attention, Mr. Sullivan, flight 422, 3WA, bound for Albuquerque. Please call the information office plane.
All the while I'm sitting there, and you know, my knees are beginning to hurt, and I'm drinking that weak coffee, and I'm walking around. And, for the first time in my life, ever since I left the steel mill, I'm feeling now an overwhelming desire for a package of mail pouch. I don't know why, but it's the truth. I wanted a package of mail pouch. I guess what I wanted to do was spit on the floor. Well, I go over to this nice little lady who's standing behind the machine there, you know, and she's got a machine and she's selling little pandas. And she's selling little airline baggies. And, you know, she's got all those little whoopee things that they sell in airline terminals there. And I go up to her and I say, lady, I want a package of mail pouch. She said, what? I said, a package of mail pouch. She said, oh, mail. Well, the mail thing is that there's a slot down there. It's by the second door. You see it? I said, mail pouch, chewing tobacco. Like that, madam. She said, what? I said, I want a package of mail pouch. So we have cigarettes. We have cigarettes. We have pipe tobacco. I said, I want a package of mail pouch. Do you have it? She said, no. And with that, she turned to a little lady that was buying a ballpoint pen that said, fly the jet route to China. And so I sort of wandered off down the line there, you know, and I'm feeling frustrated all up and down the line, all the way up and down. And the music is playing, and finally I just said, well, I got to have some fun. So I'll walk in and out of the door that opens automatically. That's always exciting. You see, you walk up to it real fast to see whether it's going to hit you in the face or whether it's not going to work at all, you know. That's always exciting. So I'm playing chicken with the door. I'm walking real fast and keeping my hands right down by my knees, see? And then, sure enough, it opens at the last second. Then I turn and try to jump back in, try to catch it, but I was never able to beat it. You can't beat the machine. So after about 20 minutes of this jazz, I walk out. Oh, I mean, it goes on and on and on. And finally, I'm walking through this fantastic terminal, and suddenly,
attention, please, for Mr. Shepard. Mr. Shepard, I'm Flight Success 37GT. Please report to the information desk.
I'm all excited. I mean, I'm being called, you know. It's suddenly a feeling of being part of something, and you have an identity. They're calling you. So I rushed down to the information. There are 428 guys lined up at the information desk. Apparently the guys that they called last Monday are still waiting in line there. There's one guy standing there, see? So after 5, 10, 15 minutes, I finally work my way up to the front, and I say, I'm Shepard. Shepard? I'm Shepard, yes. Shepard, you just called me on the PA system. He's Shepard, 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 Shepard. Oh, yes, Shepard, Shepard, you're canceled. I'm what? You're canceled. I'm canceled? What do you mean? Since you were tentative, you know. We cannot take any responsibility for tentatives. You're a tentative. A tentative. Okay. All right. Tentative. What do I do now? So it's up to you, Dad. I don't care. It's not... Play it next, please. And the next one stepped in, and I was shunned it off. I didn't know what to do. I'm canceled. I'm canceled. So I went back to that crummy door. I stood there, and finally I beat that door. I got out of that. The door wasn't expecting it. See, I turned around real quick, jumped, and I got it right full front. I ran right into it. Smacked right into the thing, kicked it on the bottom, and then it opened up. Got in a cab and came home. I just wanted to know. I just wanted to know, you know, how it really is out there. Now, what is, what is, so I'm sitting in the cab, see, on the way home, and, by the way, that's another one. I get in the cab on the way home, and the cab driver, see, I figure I'm gonna splurge myself. I feel like I've had a real rotten night, see, I'm gonna ride a cab all the way back to Manhattan. So I get in the cab, and I say, how much to Manhattan? He goes, rah! I say, how much to Manhattan? Rah, 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 rah. And he grabs the meter, and he goes, and by the time the cab got away from that big ramp that goes around, it was already $1.50. See, it's clicking up there. And I'm looking at this. It's going. We're now in Queens. The thing says $6. We're going over the bridge now. It's still knocking it off. It is now 7:25, and we're going on 3rd Ave. We just crossed on 3rd Ave. Say, hey, Mac, will you let me off here? And I can just... He says, oh, what do you want here? All right, get off here. And all the while, his radio was playing a commercial. And the commercial was saying, wow, take the new jet flight, the new Empress flight, the new route all the way to the Orient. In absolute comfort. And then on came a man who said, you know, friends, your best friend in New York City is your friendly neighborhood cab driver. Yes, your cab driver, that philosopher on the block, that cab driver who's always ready to stand by to help you. And I can't get the door of his cab open, see? I'm trying to open the door. I says, can you help me open the door? He says, open it yourself, Mac. And so I grab it, I push it, it flies open. I throw him a buck tip. He says, a buck? You cheapskate. I say, a buck? It's cost me $9 to get back in the buck. Get out of here, buck. And he puts the thing in first. It shoots oil all over my knickers, and off he goes. Just thought you ought to know. Hold it there now. Now, you see, the whole object now is... Now, the question is this. It arises. There's a very strong question that arises in my mind. What do people think when they listen and they read all the PR glop about our world, when they're actually confronted with it, when they're waiting in line, and they're canceled? Now, I'm curious about the Russians. When the Russians are being told continually that they're living the best possible lives... And they're having trouble with the potato soup. Now, what is there? You see, that's another kind of PR. They have a gigantic PR system over there. Here, if we do it, we call it public relations. If the Russians do it, we call it propaganda. So, I mean, seriously, do you know that recently all the important public relations men in the country were called to Washington for a briefing by the government? Are you aware of that? Just a few years ago, all the newsmen would have been called for a briefing by the government. But now, public relations is far more important than the actual event that it supposedly relates. You follow what I'm saying here? So the car that the company builds is far less honored and paid for and respected than the brochure about the automobile. In short, the image that the person carries in his mind about what he's buying is far more important than what he buys. Just as the show that a man goes to see in New York, his image of the importance of that theatrical experience is far more important to him than what he actually sees on the stage. And so if five critics tell him it's a fantastic show, and he gets all the quotes, and it costs him $15 a seat, and he goes down and he sees a turkey, it doesn't matter to him, apparently. I'm curious about that twist in our lives. I'm fascinated by it. We have, for example, in our own industry here, that anybody who is going to be honest about it has to admit that my own industry, radio here, for example, is spending millions of dollars every year just grinding out records. Grinding out records. And there's one station in town that has one of the saddest station breaks of all. You see, I guess people today believe that if you say something, it's already done. That if we say we're going to land on the moon first, everybody feels better, like it's already done. It's already happened. We've landed on the moon. Now, what are we going to do if tomorrow the Russians do land on the moon? How are we going to feel about that one? Again, you see, it's the confrontation of reality with the image or the public relations cliche that we've created about it. Now, take my own industry. They spend millions of dollars doing nothing but put records on. There's one poor, sad radio station that says, Total Information News. The other night I heard this guy make the station break, and it doesn't matter, you know, what the station is. Let's say it's KLUCK. KLUCK, the station for Total Information News. And now the news headlines. President Kennedy today gave a speech. De Gaulle today gave a speech. Pandit Nehru today said he's going to make a speech. And that's the news for now. And now the weather. It's cold. And now let's get back to... Yes, this is the station for Total Information News. More news coming your way in just 25 minutes. Total Information News. And you get 30 seconds headline. Apparently, the statement is more important than the fact. Well, look on television. What do you see? Hour after hour after hour of old, poor, sad, canned, cliche-ridden Western dramas. And if it isn't a Western, it's a Western with a guy wearing a surgeon suit. And it's a Western in Bellevue, you know? And if it isn't a Western in Bellevue, it's the Western in the courtroom. It's the same thing, on and on and on and on. I mean, either Perry Mason gallops in the last minute with a very spectacular tort and wins the case, or else Ben Casey gallops in with a spectacular scalpel in the last second and cuts somebody's gizzard out and wins the case. Or else, on the other hand, the cowboy drills the villain right between the eyes in the last second, and that case is won. And it goes hour after hour after hour. Well, if you're going to be honest about it, that's what's going on. It literally is going on. But we don't want to believe it. You see, we don't want to say it. So the industry spends millions of dollars every year convincing the world that that's really not what's going on, that really wonderful stuff is going on. That's where the interesting thing comes about. Wonderful stuff is going on. Hour after hour, brochure. Do you know that the public relations department of most big organizations today, Ed, is at least four times the size of the design department? Are you aware of that? Are you aware that one of the big automobile companies recently appointed its public relations head as president of the company? Not a designer or a manufacturer, but a public relations man. And that hardly any company today has any respect at all for its designers or its engineers or even its salesmen, for that matter. The guy that they really respect is the man with the image that can come in and convince the public that what we're doing is great, in spite of the rotten stuff we're turning out. And so, once in a while, a sorehead will develop, you see. And he will cause all kinds of confusion, like the recent comments by the head of the FCC. Apparently, he didn't read the brochures before he watched television. And that was considered very bad form. So everyone is very angry. And as a matter of fact, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people are going to get angry at the show that I'm doing. And they can't tell you why. They cannot tell you why. It's just rotten stuff I'm doing here. And you know who made a wonderful statement about this? Don Marquis. Don Marquis said this, and I'm going to read this to you right here because it fits right in line with what we're saying here. Marquis said, if you make people think they're thinking, they'll love you. But if you really make them think, they'll hate you. That's very, very true. As long as you think you're thinking, you love me. And the minute you start thinking, then you're going to hate me, and I'm sure of that. And you can't tell me why. We're living in a world where public relations has become far more important than anything we do. And so, on the one hand, a businessman will have about 15 wonderful cliches that he will live by. I believe in the innate goodness of man. And I believe that the reason that we are here today in our business is because we have a great public service to do to mankind. Then I'm blah, 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 in hoc agricula conch, in es spittle lock, and in God we trust. And then you turn right around and you find this ferocious old predator with the incisor teeth is spending all of his time foreclosing mortgages, firing old men from the shipping department, and in short, swinging on his expense account out at Roosevelt Raceway every time he gets the chance to do it. Now, I'm going to get angry calls again, because I'm sure I'm getting calls from the guys that produce the brochures. And that's what teased them off. In fact, one of my friends got a job. It was a fascinating thing. A bus company called him and asked him, he's a public relations man, they asked him if he wants a job. And it was a big bus company, see. And they called him in there, and this guy is a famous public relations man. He's, and by the way, one of the few PR men I know who is worried about how far we are removed today in all worlds. I'm not talking only about America. I'm talking about Russia, China, you name it. How far we are from reality in every country that I've visited and that he's visited too. And it's because we have learned that the image, you can mold the image in people's minds, and they will never relate it to what's actually happening to them. So he's gotten a reputation. So they call him in, this company, this bus company. It's a big company. So they call him in, and they told him that they have this big job that they'd like to have him do. It's going to make him a tremendous amount of money every year. It's way up in the five figures every year he's going to earn. And so he says, well, what do you want me to do? He figured automatically, you know, that they were going to have a big public relations campaign. He says, well, what we want you to do is we want you to travel around the country with a seal. I said, what? He said, yes, we've got a trained seal that plays our company's trademark. It plays our company's theme song on a bugle. He said, you want me to travel around the country with a seal, and the seal plays a bugle, and you can get me on the television shows, and we're going to promote the company? He says, why don't you do something about the dirty restrooms? Why don't you do something about the waiting rooms that you have in your company? He says, I was in one the other day in Maryland, and I was knee-deep in candy wrappers, and there were drunks sleeping under the desk, and why don't you do something about that? That's the best kind of... The guy says, now, wait a minute. We're a public relations department here, son. He says, but why don't you start there? He says, I don't think you fit. I'm glad we got right down to it right away. And he got out, walked into that stainless steel elevator and left. Fascinating. But true. Speaking of fantastic truths, time out now for a word from TV Guide magazine. This week, TV Guide profiles in its hard-hitting, truthful way the butt of 1,000 jokes. Accordion player turned entrepreneur Lawrence Welk. In a candid, hard-hitting, deep-delving article, a real profile, find out about this phenomenon of our times, TV Guide. Blow it out. Right out loud. Oh, yes, we have a note here from the Mandarin House. And I would like to say this, that it's very difficult to talk about food. And I just want to point out that if you want to visit one of the finest Oriental restaurants in the entire Eastern Seaboard area, I would suggest most respectfully Mandarin House, which is on 13th Street between 6th and 7th here in Manhattan, next to that gigantic Sandy Andy that they're building there on 6th Avenue. Do you see that thing? That's a Sandy Andy. It actually is. And you know, the guy that is in charge of that wrote me a letter after I talked about it the other day, and he says, you're right, it is a Sandy Andy. We got an endless belt there, and there's a bunch of guys on the bottom that pour sand in the little cups on the bottom there, and the sand comes up and pours out into a great big funnel on the top, and it pours down in little cups again. It goes all the way around, and we got the thing going. He says, we figure we can keep this up for 4 years before they discover that we just got a big Sandy Andy going. That's a lot of fun. He said, come on down. You can work the levers there. We're going to have some fun there. He says, we got music and everything. We got beer, the whole business. And he said, oh, yeah, it's a good deal. Speaking of good deals, we have the Madron House between 6th and 7th on 13th Street, and they're open every day of the week until, midnight, 1 o'clock, and they have a bar. And one thing that they do, they deliver in good food. They do very little advertising, you know. Madron House does not advertise. Their food is great, and it's the best advertisement that they can produce. In fact, I was talking to Mrs. Quill the other day. I says, you know, Mrs. Quill, why don't we figure out, we'll work out some kind of a TV commercial. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll dress like a Chinese waiter. I'll come in, we'll have the film. And then, you can take all that money you're spending on them candy yams, all that dough you're spending on those lotus bulbs, while we can put in the TV commercial there, we'll have this place swinging. We'll open up a countrywide chain. We'll open up a chiller coffee. I have a friend out in Youngstown, Ohio. Why, we'll have the Emily Quill Mandarin House chain from coast to coast. We'll open one up in Honolulu. And we'll... She threw me out. Listen to this. I mean, here's another example of the same story. Oh, by the way, I saw this great headline. I just have to read you this headline. Ed, are you ready with the cheers and the laughter? The headline says, and I read it, I say that only in headlines you get the truth. This headline said, and I read it from three seats away. I was riding on a Fifth Avenue bus, and I just couldn't get it out of my head. All the headline said was, sidetracked again! Does that describe my life? Sidetracked again. Yep, she threw me right out, right on the back of my neck. Keep your knees loose, Dad, and keep them brochures coming. I mean, I figured one day we'll finally produce the final brochure and we'll all be saved. Produce the final presentation and we'll all make paradise.
No, I'm not running over. The show started 2 minutes late. This has been the Dustbin of History. That was Gene Shepherd from August 22nd, 1962, was it? Hang on. Yep, that was it. We'll be back next week. Hopefully Beyond the Green Door will return when we have time. Another episode of Exploring Tomorrow, more Inner Sanctum, more Strange Dr. Weird in all likelihood. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. So long, gang.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Big deal. Well, I think we'll come to that.
And it's 2 minutes past 2 a.m. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah, that would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal. Well, I think we'll come to that.